Hi, I'm Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And today we are covering part two of Lisa Crone. So I don't know if those of you who remember, maybe a year ago, we did an episode on her.
Has it really been that long?
I don't know for sure. I'm just guessing. It was a kickoff of us doing episodes on theorists as a way to kind of dig deeper into craft, but also give you some different views. So we do want to point out that this is a theorist-specific perspective. She will disagree with some and agree with others on how things are handled. And so you just kind of want to take it with a grain of salt, see if it's something you want to try, her approach to writing or not, and, you know, whatnot.
But overall, we're pretty big fans.
Yeah. I am a fan of hers. So this is a theorist episode. We'll finish her out, and we'll probably start up with another one. We started doing marketing episodes, and then, you know, we got really bloated, and, you know, we'll still do episodes on other stuff in between just as it comes up in our own writing and critiques and just our own progress there. But you'll probably see a lot more theorist episodes coming in the next while. So today, in her work, we're going to be talking about her focus on the protagonist and how that provides structure to the whole story.
Cool.
So, This Week in Critiques. So I was reading, I'm not going to give you the name of the novel. I was reading a novel this past week, and the opening chapter is a girl walking down the street in New York. And everything that catches her eye either sparks a flashback or a memory exposition. At no point in the chapter do we know where she is going or why. And I just remember thinking, like, many times in the chapter, like, where is this going? Like, why do I even care that she's walking down the street? I don't know what's going on other than she's walking down the street. And there was no conflict. There was no tension. It was just her walking down the street. And the reason I wanted to point out this specific critique is that this is actually a very common chapter to read in an early writer's career. Like, this first draft, it's just the character doing this everyday thing, and they introduce that character to you. You know, a lot of times this is the waking up chapter, right? They're waking up. They've got the things in their room that jump start flashbacks and memories and kind of introduce you to the character. Then they look at themselves in the mirror so you can see them. You know, it's a classic character introduction, but what it does is it introduces the character, but it doesn't start the story.
Yeah.
And that's what the first chapter has to do. It has to start the story.
Man, so this is slightly related, and I think I've mentioned it on here before, but I had this chapter in Song of Locke. So Song of Locke is a quest story, right? So you're moving across a map, basically. And I had one chapter where they pause in their journey, and they build a campfire, and they talk, right? Mm. So they're sitting there talking, and I had readers say, this chapter, like, it's just boring. Like, this was late in the story, actually, but they're like, they're just not moving. So I left all the conversation, the dialogue stayed the same, but what I changed was they're still walking as they talk. They're moving toward their goal.
This is Aaron Sorkin, walk and talk, right?
Yeah, the critique went away. It wasn't boring because it was like, oh, they're talking and they're getting closer to like the big conclusion.
Oh, wow.
So just having that objective made the rest of it worthwhile.
And having them move towards it, they didn't feel like it was stagnant.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's such a small change. It was just like, okay, they're still walking. That's basically all I did.
That's kind of brilliant, though. Like how important that progression towards the goal is.
Yeah.
But within that, and we're actually going to talk about that a lot today, is in order to have that, the reader has to know what the goal is.
Right.
Right. And in that chapter, I was in the dark. She was just walking.
Right.
So, okay.
So I told you I'm reading All the Pretty Horses. I feel I'm kind of having that same problem where there's such cool characterization going on, but I don't quite understand what the point of the story is yet. Yeah. It's like, oh, I met all these cool characters, but what are they even up to?
Did you ever see the movie?
No.
I did see the movie.
Yeah, maybe that would help. I do feel a little disoriented.
So, but I mean, I think like having seen the movie, that's very much how the story goes. Like,
just meandering.
You really don't understand the story until it's over.
Okay.
And
well, that's good to know. I feel like knowing that now is going to help me proceed.
So, because the characters are very just making decisions in the moment. And it leads to some very heavy long-term consequences for them.
Wow. Oh.
But Yeah, and so there are stories like that, and I, you know, it's difficult to give the reader a big objective because the characters don't really know. But at the same time, everybody wants something, right? I guess we'll go into it more when we get into this.
Okay,
are we ready to start the discussion?
Yeah, let's jump in.
Okay, so this is Lisa Krohn. Again, this is a theorist. This is her perceptions and opinions tainted by our interpretation. So, all right. So what is it about, right? So she has this quote where she says, "Stories that lack focus often aren't about anything at all." Sounds impossible, doesn't it? But I can tell you, I can't tell you how many manuscripts I've read where if someone asked, "What's it about?" my only answer would be, "It's about 300 pages." As one editor put it, if you can't summarize your book in a few sentences, rewrite the book until you can. So here are just a few telltale signs this story is going off the rails. We have no idea who the protagonist is, so we have no way to gauge the relevance or meaning of anything that happens. And that's where we're going to focus right now, is the protagonist and how having that protagonist and then understanding that protagonist's wants and desires structure the whole novel.
So there's a lot of ways that your novel cannot have a point, and one of them is to not have a strong or a clear protagonist.
Yeah. So I think the first point that brings up is, what about multiple point of view stories, right? Not like if you look at Harry Potter, most chapters are Harry, but you get chapters from the other characters every now and again. So there's not a confusion in that kind of story. What we're talking about is Game of Thrones, right? Who is the protagonist in Game of Thrones? Right? And so I think it depends on where you at in the story, who you would claim that to be. In the first book, I think everybody says Ned Stark is your protagonist. That's pretty clear.
Well, and you can kind of base that argument on how many chapters a character gets, but I sort of don't feel like as I was reading it that I knew clearly that he was the protagonist.
So I definitely felt that way. I felt Ned was the protagonist.
Okay.
But I think that's part of why the Game of Thrones works, is in the first book, most people have a clear sense of who it is. And in the second book, you have then picked your protagonist, right? Maybe you like Jon, maybe you like Arya. You know, you pick who you want as your protagonist is kind of how that works going forward. And everybody just has their other piece of the puzzle going on.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and so I think that's part of what had made Martin's work function the way it did, is that in the first book, you kind of have that clear choice. And then there's the huge spoiler impact where he kills that person. So you can't claim that protagonist going forward.
Yeah.
You have to pick someone else.
Shocking freak.
Yeah. Yes, I couldn't believe it. I was like, who kills the protagonist? There's a series, right? What happens in the rest of the books? I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
All right. So if you listened to part one on Lisa Krohn, we're going to have a few repeat quotes here as we kind of dig folk bigger. Because last time we talked about the beginning of a story with Krohn, which again, she put heavy emphasis on your protagonist there. So we're going to start with this quote here. But here's something writers often don't know. In a story, what a reader feels is driven by what their protagonist feels. Story is visceral. We climb inside the skin of the protagonist and become sensate, feeling what he feels. And so she then has this great example that she uses about sports. Right? What would it be like to watch football or basketball if you have no idea what's going on?
Huh.
None. Like, you're not even familiar with, like, the basic function of sports or anything. Because a lot of times, that's how a reader comes into your story. Right? And so, this is what she says. As a result, it is impossible to envision the coming chain of events. That is, the story itself. It's like watching football with no idea what the rules are or how points are scored or even that it's a game at all. Imagine the protagonist, Hank, a massive man in padded spandex uniform, catches a prolate spheroid. You wouldn't know it as a football. Suddenly, a whole bunch of other spandex-clad bruisers are rushing towards him. Now what? Should he run to the right? To the left? Throw it to the guy in the red? Bury it, maybe? If you don't know what the objective is, everything appears random. The action doesn't add up, so there's nothing to follow, which makes it impossible to anticipate what will happen next. It is anticipation that creates the intoxicating sense of momentum that hooks a reader, so stories without it remain unread. So we did a big piece on anticipation. We talked about the brain science. So I'm not going to go into that again here, but it is a very big and important part of the story. And not only does it pull the reader along, but it also gives them a bigger payoff when those emotional payoffs come. So there's a movie called Blast from the Past with Brandon Fraser. He plays a guy named Adam who was born and raised in a nuclear bunker. And so he has almost no understanding of the outside world.
I don't think I've ever seen
it. And at one point, his dad attempts to explain baseball to him. And Adam just doesn't get it. He repeatedly asks his dad this question as he's explaining that the players run from one base to the next. He says, but why is he running? And his dad never explains the why. He never explains the motive behind it. He just explains the rules. And again, if you don't know that the goal is to get as many points as possible to win, if you leave out that component, what is it all for? And so it's not until Adam actually sees a baseball game played. He's like, oh, I get it. And so the way he explains it is the way his dad explains it. He runs because he must. Like, for the first time, it makes sense because he isn't explaining all the rules of the game. His dad left out that key component. Why? Why do it at all?
Right.
And that why changes whether they run or walk to a base.
Well, and also, so like, think about a battlefield. You see one team wiped out, and the other team is the victor. But you don't know whether to feel good about that or to feel bad about that unless you have a protagonist who's on one side or the other of that fight. Otherwise, yeah. It's just like, well, these are ants. Who cares? Like,
these are ants. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
So, yeah. So that movie is kind of a good illustration of her point that if you don't really understand not just the rules of the sport, but why they're playing, what they want, it doesn't make sense. You're like, yeah, that's the rule, but why does he run in the first place? So now we talk about the protagonist and the reader is one. We had that earlier quote where talking about the reader kind of goes into the skin of the protagonist, and that gives meaning and context to everything. So the protagonist is that window by which we see the story and how we experience it. Just like you said, we decide the victory or defeat of a battle based on which side our protagonist is. So if the reader can't feel what matters and what doesn't, then nothing matters, including finishing the story. The question for writers then is, where do these feelings come from? The answer is very simple. The protagonist. When we are fully engaged in a story, our own boundaries dissolve. We become the protagonist, feeling what she feels, wanting what she wants, fearing what she fears. As we'll see in the next chapter, we literally mirror her every thought. So this means that everything in this story gets its emotional weight and meaning based on how it affects the protagonist. If it doesn't affect her, even if we're talking birth, death, or the fall of the Roman Empire, it's completely neutral, right? Because it doesn't impact the person that's giving emotional meaning to everything. And guess what? Neutrality bores the reader. If it's neutral, if it's not, it's not only beside the point, it distracts from it. That's why in every scene you write, the protagonist must react in a way that the reader can see and understand in the moment or anticipate, right? Because you'll have scenes that don't directly impact the protagonist in that scene, but they will later, right?
Well, and probably in that case, you need to foreshadow well enough that even if the protagonist doesn't get it, the reader still does.
Yeah, the reader still does.
I can like tell there's weight. Like, I can tell.
So we're going to go into an example right now and talk about all this. So here's the example. For instance, the fact that Ted decided to surprise Ginger with a brand new plush Dayglow orange couch is in itself neutral. But if we know that Ginger loved her old couch, hates orange, and don't even ask her about plush, then we have a pretty good idea how she'll feel when she sees it, regardless of what she says to Ted. Right? So no matter what she says, we know how she feels, right? So let's break down this little example here. So we have this scene, right? She comes home. There's a brand new couch that her husband has gotten, and you can roll the scene. Maybe she gets irate. Maybe she doesn't. But let's break it down. So let's say you write that scene. She comes home, and maybe it evolves into a fight. They have a big fight about this new couch because she loved the old one, and she hates the color, and she hates the fabric of this new one. She just hates it in general. So we have this big fight here. But without the bigger context of why they're fighting, how she feels about these things, then we don't even know why they're fighting. We're like, why is she so mad? He bought a new couch. What's wrong with that? But we can make this like a fantastic and beautiful breakdown of so many arguments you've had in a relationship by adding context to these two characters. So we're going to go back. We have this scene. We'll go back with the rewrites, and we'll add in all the pieces we need to get here. So that it no longer feels bland, neutral, right? That he buys this couch, she comes home and she sees it, which is neutral. And then eventually we need to spiral out of control, but that doesn't feel real without the context. So the three things we need are anticipation, emotion, and why, right? So we go back a few chapters, and let's say the reason Ted buys a new couch is because the previous chapter or the previous day, he had an argument with Ginger. And she says that he doesn't fix things around the house. And he doesn't replace things when they break down. And that sticks in his head. He's having this fight. He wants to make it up to her, and that sticks in his head. You don't replace things when they wear out. And he looks at that old, worn-out couch and says, this is how I can fix things, right? So he goes out to buy a new one. Now we're like, okay, we can make this even better. So we go back even further, right? And we have a scene where, you know, in one little, we throw in a paragraph somewhere where Ginger loves this old couch. Maybe she had a rough day at work. She comes home. She sits on it. She just loves it. Right? Later on, we learn that she hates the color orange. Later on, we learn she hates the really thick, plush fabric. She hates these things. So now we go back and we write the scene where Ted goes out to buy the new couch. And every decision he makes in this story, you're just like, don't. Don't. this is the worst thing you could do. You couldn't make worse decisions if you were paid to, man. Like, this is everything you should not do. Like, get out of the store. You don't belong there. But he's doing it. And so what we have is anticipation. As Ted goes out to buy that new couch, immediately you start anticipating the terrible thing that's going to happen. But we have more than that. We know why he's there to buy a new couch, to make her happy. And so there's this beautiful paradox that we see is coming. Like, it's like a train wreck. You can see it happening long before it happens, and you can't look away.
It's good drama.
Right? And so you have that fight, and then we work back from there. We fill in the anticipation. We fill in the why. And now when it happens, it's fantastic. Right? And it's this beautiful evolution of this argument that she's now irate at him for getting the couch. And he's doing exactly what she told him to do, replacing something worn out. So he doesn't know why she's angry. Doesn't make sense to him. And I know a lot of people who've been in that argument where you're like, I don't understand why you're mad. I did what you said.
So this is a good time maybe for me to bring up. I'm working on my science fiction book, and I wrote the first draft through to the very last chapter. And now my
trilogy, the whole trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's three books at once. But I got to the last chapter, and now I've been writing the second draft in reverse. So I do a second draft of the last chapter, second draft of the second to last chapter, backward, because I want to make sure, like you're talking about here, that everything is pointing toward that ending.
Yeah.
So that, like, it's being built properly to look forward to that. And I love how you broke this scene down. And you're like, okay, how can we make that matter by writing something before that?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just, yeah, I love this concept. It's so cool.
So, yes, this is what Crone says about it. She says, thus, it's not just that we see the things she sees, talking about Ginger, it's that we grasp what they mean to her. In other words, the readers must be aware of the protagonist's personal spin on everything that happens. This is what gives narrative story its unique power. What sets its prose apart from plays, movies, and life itself is that it provides direct access to the most alluring and otherwise inaccessible realm of the imaginable, someone else's mind. Nothing happens in a vacuum or just because, especially in a story. The whole point of a story is to explore this why, and the underlying issue that, in real life, dear old Susan never let on that she was struggling with. Otherwise, how will we, as readers, be able to pick up pointers for navigating our own lives? Mm. So, yeah. So that's the scene, that's the breakdown, and that's kind of why those things, why the protagonist structures the novel. Their wants, their desires, and then just the things that matter to them are what structure that whole thing, right? I mean, this story is probably a romantic comedy about a couple, right? And the big thing is, you know, either they're getting together and this is, you know, a fight point for them. But just the personal desires of Ginger are what structure that entire scene. She doesn't want a new couch, but yet she has told Ted, I want you to replace the things that when they wear out. Right? That's just, if a bulb goes out, you replace it, you know? And then he sees the couch and says, I can replace that. You know, that was her desire that
just
triggered
kills
that.
Me. Just thinking about it now, it just kills me.
Uh-huh. And it's that she hates the color and the fabric and she loved the old one. All of those desires of hers are what shaped the whole scene. Because it, without it, you burn his couch? Nice. It doesn't matter.
And to me, this boils down to empathy. Like, if we can't feel the emotion of empathy, then it's going to be a flat or a dry story. I used the example of ants earlier. Like, I don't know, you're like walking down the sidewalk and you don't see. I mean, you're just like, well, they're on their merry way. I don't care about the ants, right? You don't empathize with them. You take a story like Bug's Life. And suddenly you've humanized an ant in a way that, oh, I can feel what this ant is feeling.
Yeah.
And yeah, that matters so much, that empathy.
One thing I do want to bring up, because I don't think this really fit neatly into any other episode, was a common mistake that she points out. And like I said, this is like a total tangent from the rest of the episode. Is the most common mistake writers make is using body language to tell us something we already know. If we know Anne is sad, why would we need a paragraph describing what she looks like when she's crying? Rather, body language should tell us something we don't know. And I thought this is something I'm actually very guilty of myself, is just using those action beat body languages to kind of emphasize the emotion as opposed to reveal something deeper. So I, you know, reading that, I was like, I don't think I can do a whole episode on that, but I felt like it was important to bring it up.
Cool.
Thanks for listening. As always, we'd love it if you would leave us a review on whatever platform you listen. If you want to write us an email, you can do that at jbendoski@gmail.com. And hopefully it won't get lost in the clutter.
Wait, is there a lot of clutter?
I've been getting a lot of emails recently. So some are fans of the books and some are from the podcast, and so there was one or two that I was like, I'm supposed to respond to that, and I like couldn't find it, and I felt really bad.
Oh,
so if you didn't get a response, that's why I lost it. So,
dang it.
Or what else? If you want to support the show, check out one of our books, and I think that's everything.
Yeah, guys, thank you for listening.